We're calling it the Day of the Great American Do-Over. Beginning today through Monday, 6,000 federal prisoners will be released under the U.S. Sentencing Commission's sentencing guidelines agreed upon last April. The Great American Do-Over, releasing prisoners, reclaiming justice. A grand mission, and with over 2 million people in prison, 6,000 is really a paltry start, but it's a start. And while the do-over starts with each inmate's challenging reentry into society, it continues with a redefinition of prison and our expectations of what happens there. And the do-over ends with a complete reexamination of how our justice system works or doesn't. We'll be talking about all of that over the next few months. But let's start where these inmates are starting, the first days and weeks back in society. For these offenders, years, 9 years on average, have gone by. Charles Simmons and Glenn Martin know the difficulties of this experience and the limited joys of freedom on the outside. Charles went to prison as a teenager the first time. Today, he lives in the Bronx. Glenn is a national leader and criminal justice reform advocate who spent 6 years in New York State prisons. He is president and founder of Just Leadership USA. Glenn and Charles, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about what these guys are going to be facing, literally, as they walk out and are suddenly back on the street.
I mean, the only thing that's on your mind is freedom. The car, anything like that, especially when you return and you come into Port Authority. So just to see the people and buses is like the overwhelm them of that. And after that settled in, then the reality settings.
You got to think of it like this, right? You're in a situation where there's no vehicles going 30, 40, 80 miles an hour while you're in prison. So even seeing vehicles whiz by seems so highly unusual. Even crossing the street is something that needs to be relearned because it's so intimidating. And then the truth is you're just wondering sort of where you fit in. I mean, think of a game of double dutch where you're trying to figure out how to sort of jump in the middle of this madness. That's a bit of what it feels like.
So those are the feelings the moment you kind of hit the street. And then you begin to ask questions, all right, so what's my place here? So what's my role? So how do I get a job? And all those kinds of things. And that's where you feel the wind maybe hitting in the face a little bit.
Before you come home, they have pre-release programs to help you with that, you know, and give you a little bit of pointers. But it's nothing like to reality when you come back into society and you release. So those barriers that you might have learned in pre-release or whatever, and the people that came up there, it's a different story when you return to the society and actually reality sets in and you see some of these people and you get them knows.
Using your experience, you know, these people who are coming out, 6,000, and, you know, they're going to have had pre-release programs. Everybody wants this to work, apparently, because the federal government, you know, is really interested in this working. Where are these inmates first likely to encounter, oh, wait a minute, it's a little bit different than what they told me?
I think the first place where these folks are going to be a bit taken aback is the labor market. I worked with Diva Page and Bruce Western at Princeton about 8-9 years ago, where we hired young people to pose as job seekers with criminal records here in the New York City entry-level labor market, and found out that a white person with a criminal record has a better chance of getting a job than a black person who's never been incarcerated ever. And unfortunately, for employers who don't have any level of sophistication around criminal justice, like most people, they decide that they don't want to take what they see as perceived risk in hiring a person with a criminal record. As I said, I applied for jobs moving boxes around, making $16,000 a year, and couldn't land that job, even though 6 years later I was running a nonprofit with a $23 million budget and 212 people on staff.
But that's a very unusual story. I mean, most people aren't going to be able to do what you did.
I'm glad you said that, because people often do that, which is exceptionalize me. But the truth is I was exposed to exceptional opportunities. I did go to college while I was on the inside. You're right. That is rare. But my most difficult day in prison was my last day there, and people often ask me why. And it's because I felt as though I was leaving behind some of America's best and brightest. And if my story is the exception, it's because of these very same barriers that we're discussing.
How would you describe the challenge of leaving behind the society and the rules of prison, where certain things you can be proud of, maybe even having a criminal record can be something of a trophy, and on the outside, realizing that everything that you value on the inside may be something that you have to hide?
Well, it was a trophy, and the like I said, the early part of my younger years, it was like a celebration. You went to jail early on. That's what I got exposed to. It was like you came home from jail. I went in early. I went in at 18 and came out at 21. So when I went in, it was like, you know, I went in as a teenager and then came out as an adult. And I didn't really learn. So, but when I came home, it was like you came home from college and it was really jail.
What are people's ideas about what goes on in prison? Because people get popularized notions of what prison is about by watching TV and movies. Do people have a kind of worst case scenario idea of what goes on in prison? So you say you went to prison, they immediately assume, you know, you were in some hole somewhere.
Yes, I mean, you know, some of the butt of the jokes be, you know, when you come home, it's like, did you drop the soap? That's like the number one thing, you know.
That's really scary.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, because it's a different world in there compared to out here. But for the most part, it's just about survival.
You know, if prison was what you see on television every day, our prison population would solve itself, right? Like, if it was all about rape and murder and pillaging every minute while you're in there, people would be dying every day, and we wouldn't have to worry about it. That would be a great way to reduce the population as far as some people are concerned. But that's not what prison was like.
What advice do you have for these people who are coming out?
The advice that I have is network. The best thing to do is network, because being able to network and education, but networking, it might open some doors that people normally that don't have open, but somebody might know somebody that knows somebody. So network is very important, and we forget that.
I would tell people just never give up on their dreams. It's going to be really difficult. I remember exiting prison and owing $100,000 in fines, fees, restitution, and child support, and my first job was $16,000 a year. But I also know that 3 weeks ago, I had a meeting with our president of the United States, President Obama, about these issues. And so while everyone may not have that trajectory, but the truth is there are so many moments during the transition where you want to give up. And I would just tell people that in the end, your destiny is not written for you, but it's written by you. So you should remain focused.
Charles and Glenn, thank you so much.
Good to be here.
Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Charles Simmons lives in the Bronx today. Glenn Martin is a national leader and criminal justice reform advocate. They both spent years in prison.